This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 608. Hey, thanks for buying tickets to the Fun Comfortable Tour. Second shows are starting to be added in all the cities. So right now, second show in Boston, second show in Portland, second show in Seattle, and I think some more are going to get added next week. You can go to funcomfortabletour.com to get tickets and info on that. It starts January 16th. And then goes through May. And then actually, I'm also doing a bunch of shows at Cobb's in San Francisco. That is, it's technically part of the tour, sort of. But that's December 11th through the 13th. So I'm doing five shows there with my pal Blaine Kapach is going to be up on the show as well. So go to Cobb's Comedy. I think it's CobbsComedyClub.com. I don't know. Google Cobbs. I'm sorry. That's the best I can do right now. I just got up a second ago. Yee! Michaela Watkins, who is geniusly funny and is promoting her show Benched on the USA Network Tuesdays at 10:30 p.m. Here's the Nerdist Podcast, number 608, with Michaela Watkins.
Now entering Nerdist.com. Guys, this is going great.
I was just wondering if we just start these things now without me showing up. Because I never show up.
No, so we... Listen.
Hi, you are...
You're as big a surprise...
Hi, Matt.
...to me, as I'm sure you are to the people
but
listening.
But I literally just saw you.
But you didn't say you were coming here.
You didn't even mention it.
Because you never...
I saw Kyle. That was my heads up. I was like, hey, Kyle, it starts at 1, right? He's like, no, 12:30. I was like, oh,
when was the last time you just showed up to a podcast?
Saturday.
Besides
2 days ago.
Besides that one.
Peter Farrelly the week before that.
Okay, besides those 3.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Do you need a bigger pashmina?
I do. Do you have a quilt?
I do. I have a pashmina closet.
Did you already
closet.
Check the pashmina drawer?
Yeah, it's full of
nothing.
You're using cashmere pashmina?
Oh, I guess we just passed out all our
cashmere by Led Zeppelin.
No, it's very nice in here, but very chilly in here.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, we're starting to get into what some people in Los Angeles would recognize as fall, but which
winter.
Means that it's basically
a high of 75.
Yeah,
clear skies.
Yeah, but it's crisp. It's crisper than normal.
I know. At night, you need two pashminas.
By the way, I love that Chris is hogging the space heater.
Well, it doesn't.
No. I'm good. I'm good.
You can hear.
I'm
it.
Good. The more I talk, the more I sweat. It's going to be great.
This is cardio for us, you guys. This is what we're doing right now.
It is.
Where did you grow up?
Syracuse, New York. It's a very, I don't know. I've gotten in so much trouble for saying terrible things about it.
But
continue.
The president of Syracuse?
I'm the spokesperson for Syracuse. I wish it was like Portland, Oregon, where it's like, don't move there, man. Okay, just stay in L.A. But no, nobody goes to Syracuse. It's a terrible place. It's like, rents are so cheap, man, but don't come, okay? Just keep, stay in LA. No, it's
so you go back a lot?
Well, my dad lives there.
Oh, okay.
And so no.
No.
It's pretty. I mean, they have the Finger Lakes. There's some natural. the Finger fucking Lakes. Get fingered in
there. Ah, there it is. You get fingered. Is that by Fist Pond? Come on. We could just do this all day long. What's wrong?
You're good.
I just don't want you to be aware of the bacteria growth that happens in still pond water.
Oh, thank you for that.
You don't want a finger blast in there.
No, thank you for that.
No, don't get fingered in the Finger Lakes.
That was helpful.
That should be the.
Now you tell me.
That should be the
or
motto
it
for the city.
Sticker. Don't I got fingered in the Finger Lakes.
The Finger Lakes. Also, I died.
It's like when
I got fingered in the lakes.
I did not survive getting fingered in the Finger Lakes.
Oh, it's just one of those family stick figure things on the back, and then there's one crossed out. Got fingered in the Finger Lakes.
My parents went to the Finger Lakes, but all I got was fingered in the Finger Lakes by my uncle Dave.
All I got is a one parent household.
See, these are many things.
This is good.
We'll all get in trouble.
Yeah,
now
Syracuse.
For making fun of Syracuse.
Don't just go there to root on basketball. Get fingered.
Yeah. You know, we're worried it doesn't like rhyme or anything.
Hey, you know what? I'm just throwing out ideas, t-shirt guy.
Let's also work with the phrase root on basketball. let's maybe table that one.
This meeting at a Syracuse t-shirt company is now underway.
I got a couple more for
We
ya.
Got old business first. Finger banging bumper stickers are not selling like we thought. We are moving out of the bumper sticker business back to exclusively t-shirts.
All right, no, I have an idea. Now hear me out. Alrighty,
okay,
right?
Is it a t-shirt?
No, it's a bumper sticker.
I just said from the old minutes.
I didn't have a chance to say anything from old business.
Oh,
I'm sorry I'm late. Guys, I got it.
All right, but is this a bumper sticker or a t-shirt? T-shirt.
It's a bumper sticker.
Yay!
Nice.
That you wear as a t-shirt.
What?
Hang on, I'm listening.
It just says fingered.
It's so simple.
With a basketball on the eye.
Fingered on basketball. Can you finger a basketball?
Just for like a minute.
Oh.
Yeah.
My idea was to make a bumper sticker in the shape of like three fingers.
Okay. A bumper sticker in the shape of three fingers.
Like, yeah. Now, is it a whole hand? Is there a thumb attached to it?
Yeah,
or is
and
it just
the pinky is curled under, and then the three fingers.
Sir, you can't be in here, sir. I'm going to have to ask you to leave,
sir.
Yeah, sir, take your three-finger idea.
Carl, I thought it was understood when we fired your uncle, you would no longer be here.
Well, I still got fingers. So I thought as long as I have fingers, I could be here. This meaning. Is that how it works?
When did you leave Syracuse? Immediately?
as soon as there was, I saw an out, I took it.
Yeah.
Which was my parents got divorced.
Hooray!
And then my mom got a job in Boston. And I was like, see you later, Syracuse. I'm out of here. And I said, just like that.
You weren't wrong.
As I was leaving, going up the New York State Thruway.
How old were you when you went to Boston?
I was 14.
Yes. Nice.
Good age to hit Boston.
If you're not getting fingered in Syracuse,
get on the Haymarket and get fingered there.
Hey, who's
transfer
that?
To the green trick.
Get in line here. Ice cold fingers, yeah?
That sounds terrible. Who would want that?
Get your ice cold fingers.
Ice cold fingers, yeah?
That's actually what they say at the gynecologist in Boston. That's how they say you're next.
Get your ice cold fingers. Step right up, ladies.
I went too many Fenway games. Ice cold fingers, yeah. So that was that.
And then what did you do in Boston? Any comedy stuff in Boston?
I went to college. That was hilarious.
Where'd you go? Emerson, BU?
BU, yeah. Mm-hmm,
me too.
You know, my grades were funny. And then as soon as I saw an out, guys.
I see a pattern here.
I took it.
At what point are you going to leave the show to this particular podcast?
As soon as
I saw an out.
Ooh, good idea. See
you. No, come back.
That's an out. I then went to New York for a year. Starved. Mm-hmm. Went to Portland, Oregon on a road trip. Was like, this is nice. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Stayed for 5 years and then came to LA.
But when did the
I saw an out.
when did the comedy start?
Well, I guess, you know, I guess, it, I don't know, college. I was trained to be like a Shakespearean. Like, I was doing the classical theater training at BU, and I just always, I remember sitting back, I did went and did regional theater, and I was like sitting backstage in Portland doing Winter's Tale, and I just was like, I want to go be on a sitcom. I'm going to LA. and it was that hard a turn, because I always like to make people laugh, but I'd kind of gone down this other more sort of the thing that you feel like you're supposed to do, which is like in the East Coast, nobody does sitcoms, you know, it's you go and do theater. And so that's like, that was the only portal I knew.
I've lived in LA for a long time. I don't know what that one word is.
It's a place where you go and you bond and make a lot of friends.
What's the parking like?
And there's no parking.
Oh, well,
yeah,
I
no, you
sorry,
carpool.
Could I Uber to there?
Not then.
Oh. No.
Yeah, no. So, yeah, I like the camaraderie of theater. So I came and I joined the Groundlings because I like being on stage with other people. I don't like to be alone.
No, that's very difficult to just join the Groundlings.
Oh.
So you obviously are, I mean, like, I just want people to understand that it's a very hard process.
It was, yeah.
You don't just get to go, hey, I want to be in the Groundlings. Like, it takes years and you really have to be really funny. So just to give you credit for.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go ahead and take that. Thank you.
Were you in the main company?
I was in the main company, yeah. But I have to say that when I went to a Groundlings show and I saw what they were doing on stage, I was like, I like that. I want to do that.
And did you start the process immediately?
And then I started the process immediately, yeah. So, and then it probably would have taken longer, but I had really lenient teachers who were like, maybe take this class again. And I was like, maybe I don't.
Okay.
Like, okay.
I mean, she's yes anding already.
No, that was a denial.
Oh, wait, hang on.
That was a maybe and.
That was a maybe and.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yes, and I will not take this class again. So that's.
Yes, and I feel that I could move on up. No, so I got into the main company, which was good because I started late. You know, I was a late bloomer. I went, like I said, we talked about this. I went to Portland.
Yep.
It's a big detour.
You saw
there.
Out, and then you started immediately.
I saw out, but I was already almost 30 at that point. So. I had a hustle. I knew I had a little minute to take a kick at the can. So I kicked it hard.
Hard.
In the can, guys.
What?
In the can.
Kicked
I don't
it
understand.
In the can.
And you kicked it in the can. You know
Is
what I mean?
Like a butthole?
It's like a butt.
You kicked, what did you kick in the butthole?
You know, not in,
kicked
physically,
it.
In
I kicked
the
it in the butthole.
The cans have buttholes now?
Oh
man, where have you been? Jesus. Welcome to the world.
It's a brave new world of lakes that will finger you and cans with buttholes. That's what I would like to see our culture become.
Everybody's learning from this podcast.
Taking the Groundlings track always seemed like a really daunting task.
Yeah. I like structure though. I needed it. You know, I wasn't I'm not one of those people that's like, I got a camera and I got, you know, I'm gonna fuck that. I'm gonna go out there and I'm gonna fucking make some fucking art. I needed like structure. I needed somebody to be like, be here at 10
and then
leave it too, and then there's another level and you'll do that. And I needed, you know, I needed to see like, oh, okay, if I do this then it ends up there, I think.
And was it pretty much the second you started taking classes there?
As soon as I started taking classes, I was like, this is it. I love it. I'm a pig in shit here. This is awesome. I liked everybody I met. I mean, no, that's not true. I liked so many people. I liked so many people that I met. And then what I was really curious about was writing for myself. Because, you know, as actors, like, you're just so at the mercy of whatever. And not being, you know, a supermodel, you're sort of relegated to these kind of, you know, a best friend part or whatever. And you're never really you just have no power. You can't determine what you're going to say and do and what your take and what's funny and all those things. You don't get to have that say because you're sort of there to support whatever is the funny vision of whatever it is, you know, because I'm not leading lady. Let's just say that. So when I got to take the writing classes and then you could start writing for yourself, then it was really awesome because I could put my sense of humor on the page and then everybody in the audience had it endure it for 5 minutes, for 5 minute increments.
God, I used to hear that. I heard that for so many years about why I wouldn't get parts. I'm like, well, he's not leading man enough. Like,
yeah.
Ugh.
I know.
Fuck,
but now they're putting
guys.
Really, really like mediocre looking people on TV and film now.
I know.
So
I have
it's
two
really
shows.
Working out.
The industry now.
But it is, it was sort of.
But you're cute. You got that all American cute, good look.
What are you talking about? What?
Why are you posing so much right now?
I don't know. I'm not. I'm just trying to stretch
Why
out.
Why are you stretching?
Oh, what time is it? I don't even know.
You've never worn a watch.
Oh, that's why I don't know what time it is. I'm just looking for my watch. Would it be here or
no,
there?
It's none of those places. Right, oh, it's not in your groin.
Oh, wait, it is.
Oh, found it.
I got a dick watch on.
Hey,
dick watch. Dick watch with Chris Hardwick.
Tonight on Dick Watch.
Two dicks crossing the street on Dick Watch.
That's where we just like find out who's sending dick pics to whom. This Dick Watch.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be a big
thing. I'll host the Dick Watch after show. Talking dick.
Talking dick. Do you like hosting stuff at all ever? Have you ever hosted
That's
stuff?
That's such a weird question that you just asked. I just did a fundraiser the other night. Do you all hear that?
Yeah,
AC?
We all do.
That's good.
It's probably them pouring massive amounts of concrete into the new part of the studio that's across
good.
The street.
Yeah. Yeah, there's construction around here.
Okay.
So you hosted a fundraiser?
Yeah, and it was so terrifying, but I loved it. And I thought, you know what must be really fun? Are people who have, like, Daily Show writers writing super funny jokes for them and then going on and, like, making fun of Donald Trump at the White House press dinner. Doesn't that sound like a blast? You should do that.
That does not sound fun at all.
No?
No.
Isn't that kind of what we do for you?
I mean, that's...
Well, not... I think the White House Correspondents' Dinner does not sound like fun.
Oh, yeah, no.
Really? Because I think you would crush that.
No, I don't think I would at all.
I think you would. Hashtag Dickwatch thinks that you should crush it.
Tonight's hashtag war is Dickwatch.
Dickwatch. I don't... that does not... If I am ever asked to do that, I think I don't know if I... I don't know if that's really my, you know...
Oh, it is not.
No,
because I don't write political jokes. And
no, but other people, that's what I think
other
people
would
must
write
them
for him,
you.
But then Chris is a wonderful person at trying to go right down in the middle, appeal to as many people as possible, and the divisiveness of doing a political themed.
But you just
know.
Make fun of everybody.
Well, I don't think it's that I like to. I don't think it's that I'm trying to appeal to as many people as possible. I just don't like. I'm just not...
You just don't want to be a dick about
I just don't
want to
be a dick.
Have to be.
And I don't want to have to... I'm so entrenched in social media, I just don't want to deal with people, you know, how could you say that? Like, I don't...
Oh,
Just leave me alone.
Yeah.
It was a stupid joke. Like, I just don't...
That's true. Everybody's
got it's just the aftermath of, you know, dealing with other people. But it just sounds so... Like, that one sounds really intense. It's basically a room full of people who are...
The most powerful people in the
and
world.
Also not, you know, like, it is supposed to be kind of a comedy event, but they're not really laughers.
See,
they're not really there to laugh.
I think the hardest one would probably be the Oscars or the Emmys. Because
there's
everybody
no question.
Is just, like, geared and ready to destroy you.
The Emmys, for sure. The Oscars, 1,000,000% by a lot. Because not only are they geared to destroy you, but it's also a room full of people who are taking themselves very seriously, who also... A lot of them are just uncomfortable and nervous, and it's just not a it's not a good
supportive.
Yeah, like, the Oscars room is not a supportive room for comedy. I don't think. I mean, obviously, comedic things can happen, but I think Neil's going to do a great job next year.
Neil Patrick.
Yes. He's going to
be pretty seasoned.
Magic.
But he's got that, like, he just comes in. You're like, yay! You know, he comes in loaded. But so do you. That's what I'm saying is you're so affable that I feel like you know.
Well, I appreciate that.
Well, you're so. Welcome.
But to me,
I've been giving this so much.
But I
thought
it's
just
funny
in the last
when,
5 seconds
when they asked Tina Fey if she would ever host the Oscars, she was like, oh no.
I mean, careers are made on people saying horrible things about the person hosting the Oscars. So,
I mean, it's almost like it. So much of the time, it feels like the bad reviews are pre-written, and then just the second, you know, like the second the broadcast starts, they just
fill
post
a name,
it.
Fill
yeah,
a
they
name.
Just post it.
And I feel like this started with David Letterman hosting.
You think so?
I feel like that's when it sort of started being real. Like, let's just shit on whoever's hosting this.
Yeah.
The Oprah Uma thing, which I thought was hilarious.
I thought that was great, too. I did not think that deserved all the shit that it got.
It was amazing. It was a... And the fact that I remember the shit he got.
What was that again? The Oprah...
Oprah Uma. It was 94, the Oscars, mm-hmm. 94, and he was introducing...
I'm sorry, I was very enmeshed in the theater that year, so I don't remember.
He just enjoyed, as David Letterman often does, funny-sounding names, mm-hmm. Which is why he also enjoyed saying Boutros Ghali a lot when that was a thing.
Yes.
So Oprah and Uma, naturally, they were in the same room. He had to keep introducing them to each other just to keep saying Oprah, Uma, Uma, Oprah.
Which is a very Letterman-esque thing to do.
It is.
And
it
so
is.
Then, but then people were like, what the, how could he? Yeah. It's like,
not
he does.
Funny.
I feel like.
By the way, the Oscars are the Tonys for movies, just in case you didn't.
Oh, that yeah. sounds fun.
Yeah. yeah.
Oh, do they have the Song and Dance Man come
there out? There is a Song and Dance Man competition.
I just feel like there needs to be a... I feel like people have run out of things to sort of hate on, so there just should be a bureau of, like, where you go and you're like, what hasn't been hated yet? And they're like, softball. And you're like, okay, great. I'm going to go, you know, rail on that.
There is
for
a bureau.
While.
It's called the World Wide Web.
Yes, that's right.
I know, but yeah,
the president.
It's just amazing to me. I mean, you create anything and you put it out there, and there's going to be some mm-hmm. idiot, like... Just some idiot who's going to find one thing to extract from it and say, okay, this is an example. I'm not saying this to plug my show, but I have a show, Bench, that I co-created. And it's 22 minutes of Eliza Coop being awesome. And somebody wrote an article that said, Bench doesn't think career women can handle relationships.
What?
Like, that's your takeaway from a legal show from our lead woman who's single is that, like, Benched, and that there's, you know, a company called Benched, and that we sit around and go, I don't think women can. I mean, if she's working, she can't handle a relationship, right?
Our agenda out in the form of a television program.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
By the way, Eliza Coop is really fucking funny.
She's really fucking funny. She was on your show.
She was on our show. Mm-hmm. You were also on the show. Mm-hmm. And it was.
Eliza informed me she's from Portsmouth, New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Portsmouth, New Hampshire.
I had a
Red
Sox
hat on. She's got a tattoo. Live free or die.
She's real. She's very, very, very funny.
Mm-hmm.
So it is. When you're like, but we're just making a show, and like, why would that be the thing?
Yeah,
that you.
I know.
To...
I know. My writing partner's like, yeah. And didn't you know, Breaking Bad thinks all teachers cook meth.
Like, every single one.
Yeah.
That's the message.
Yep. That's the takeaway.
I don't know what else you could get from it other than that. If you're a science teacher, you're making meth and killing people.
Yeah.
The only thing above criticism is cereal.
Why is Captain Crunch a man?
No, the podcast.
Oh, okay. All right. Sorry.
Why is Captain Crunch a man, though? Good point, Chris.
Yeah. Oh my God! All cereal thinks that cereal is for the army.
Well, I would think he would be,
the navy.
Yeah, naval admiral.
Yeah, no, I don't want to see.
He's
yeah,
he's a captain. He was demoted.
Oh, he's a cap-in.
He's a cap-in.
Yeah.
He used to be Admiral Crunch apostrophe RL.
Admiral
Crunch.
He was Admiral Crunch, and for a while he didn't know what to do without his command of a
Well,
ship.
He was Admiral Crunch, and then we caught him on Dick Watch, and he was demoted to captain.
When they went out to find V'ger, he took command back.
So that's So that was the story behind that cereal.
Get back your command, Captain. Your place is on the bridge.
I'm so glad you wandered in here and found us today.
Sort of drifting at sea like Captain Crunch. It's important, though, I think, that you don't be too affected by these types of things.
No, I stopped eating for 2 weeks and counting.
Great.
That you can't control
I'm
what people...
I'm on a starvation diet because I am protesting this one weird guy. But the thing is, it's so funny about the web is that there's no... I mean, like, I would never... Who is this dude from something I've never heard of? Like, I would never normally... ever see him, but it's listed, like, if you start Googling reviews or something, it's like New York Times, and then this clown, and then, like, you
from
know
the clown
I mean?
Times,
and then, like, Variety or whatever, and then, you know, the Kansas, you know, Steamship Chronicle, or it's like some, you know,
Kansas Steamship Chronicle. I need a subscription. You know what? I just get the Sunday Steamship Chronicle delivered. I love the nautical coupon.
It's bench amazing. Not be about benches. False advertising.
Wait, no. Why would a steamship have a pirate on it?
He's not a pirate.
It's steam-powered. They all use sail.
Oh, well, I don't know. Well, so are you telling
like,
me...
Think wait, more like Mark Twain.
Are you telling
era.
Me that you can't have, like, an inland pirate?
No.
Like, you think sea...
You can have an inland pirate in Pittsburgh, that's, and they play baseball.
That's pirate racism right there, to say that pirates are not capable...
If I'm racist about one thing, it's pirates.
I see. So pirates can't handle smaller bodies of water, then. Is that it, Matt?
Pirates just belong on the open sea. And they tell Tom Hanks...
Oh, that's the same kind of pirate propaganda that's been keeping the pirate down all these years, Matt.
Guys, we just lost Somalia.
Our downloads ticked down to -1.
That was weirdly our biggest demographic. No one actually knew.
Well, just people in Somalia start uploading our podcasts. Like, fuck this. Get it off my computer.
Yeah, of course. That's what they would do. They would have to pirate the podcast.
They would have to, like, unpirate the podcast.
Of course.
They're like,
that's what they would do.
The only way they could escape the
hey, Somalia,
pirating was...
Guys, you know you could just get this for free on iTunes. You don't...
Doesn't matter.
To...
I'm the captain now.
All right. We upload your podcast, Irish.
Oh, guys.
Oh, my God. Who Benched was that guy?
Great.
I'm the captain now.
What
I auditioned for that. Hey, how, I'm the
you
captain.
Didn't get it?
I'm the captain.
You got a call
now.
Back, though, right?
I did. I went in there. I was like, I'm the captain now.
Dog. I'm the captain now, dog.
Chuck Connery comes back to play a Somali pirate. His only demand is that he is allowed to be in blackface.
No!
You're like, no!
No!
Chuck Connery, no!
What's like, wrong?
But this is what I want to do.
This is what color they are. Sean!
I told you I'm coming out of retirement for this only.
This is just science.
Science.
This is just science is all this is. I don't understand why I can't...
I'm just going to put this on the shelfie.
Why can't,
did you say shelfie?
Why can't I be in darkface?
Why is he saying dark. Shelfie?
That's what he would say.
I just put this on the shelfie.
Shelfie?
I just took a shelfie.
Shelfie.
You took a picture of yourself? I took
it's a
picture
a
of myself.
It's a shelfie.
It's a shelfie.
It's a shelfie.
From IKEA. Yep. It's a shelfie.
So if you want to use any of this on Bench.
Good, yeah.
I like to come in and derail things.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, no, this is good stuff. This is good stuff. Probably won't get another season, so this is great. This is great.
Wait, Nerdist is getting canceled?
No, she was talking about her show.
Not my show.
Oh.
But now that you bring it up.
Do you like being a creator showrunner person?
I do. Yeah. I like acting more, and I like what I do. I mean, it's along those lines of what we were just talking about having, you know, some sort of voice and authority and sort of what gets put on the air. I mean, there's something really amazing about when you're shooting and say, no, have them do this. And then they do it. And then it gets, you know, broadcast.
You've got all the responsibility too, though.
It's so much responsibility, which, you know, is probably...
Do you ever get to go home is my question.
I did go home, but you never get to turn off. You never get to like go not a showrunner until the whole thing is like in the can and just waiting to air. And then once it does air, I mean, I was traveling for the entire month of October. I went to Southeast Asia, to Nepal, Tibet, and Bhutan.
Oh wow!
When the show, which I didn't know before I was leaving for the trip, they were going to put the pilot up online on USA Network. And so I was in Tibet, which I don't know if you have been to Tibet, but did you not have?
Did you eat, pray, and love?
I did all three. yeah, I probably
did. All those things.
I don't know how well I prayed.
Why Tibet?
My husband he's like very adventurous, and he thought it'd be super fun and really cool, and he thought it would be.
Part of him that was like, I'm gonna
kill you and leave you there.
From the Tibet side.
From the Tibet side. Are you reading his diary?
Yes.
Because that's uncanny he says. Honey, one day. No, so he's just an adventurous dude. And he said, came home and he was like, honey, sometimes life just presents an opportunity that you can't say no to.
Is your husband Darren Stevens?
I know. I was like, have you been drinking? And my nephew, who's living with us right now, is like, should I go? And I'm like, I don't know. Stay here. And so he said, honey, we got an opportunity. Basically, a friend of his put together this trip. And so we were going to leave for a month. And I was like, sadly, had no reason why I couldn't go. And so I was like, yeah, let's do it. But I'm terrified of flying. Super, super, super scared.
It's a lot of flying from here to Tibet.
It's a shit ton. So especially Bhutan, which has the world's most dangerous airport in the world. When they say the world, they mean it. They mean it.
Why is that?
They don't kid around.
Is that the crazy runway that like...
If by crazy you mean because it's wedged between two giant mountains.
Right,
yes.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's not... let's just say it's dark and there's some cloud coverage. You're not... Your chances of landing go down exponentially.
Yeah, and so the day, so once you land there, you're like, what did we just do? Because I just looked out the wing and it was like kissing the treetops of the mountain to the right. And then you look out the other window and the wing is like maneuvering around this other mountain. I mean, this is not one of those flights where they just, the pilots just push a bunch of buttons and go, you know, and like kick back. This is like, they have to actually fly.
The weather is 63 degrees.
Nope, they can't even, they don't even have time to talk about numbers. So they land and then I spent the entire week going, oh my God, we got to fly out of here. And then the one morning we were flying out, it was total cloud coverage. Uh-huh. And I saw online in Bhutan where it says, you know, they can't use instruments to fly and navigate there. They have to go off visuals. And so I was like, there's cloud coverage. So I took a lot of Ativan, and then I approached the pilot in the cockpit and said, so what's the plan? Like, how are we getting out of here, guys? And
I'm going to pull back on this stick.
I'm going to hit you on the head. But what they don't tell you when you travel in sort of, I guess it's sort of third worldy, they planes just kind of make stops in other countries, like bus stops where people get on and get off and they don't announce it. So we're flying to Bangkok, but you know, 50 minutes into the flight, we're landing and I'm going, no, this is a 2.5 hour flight.
Oh, sorry.
You have an alert. Is it a tornado? Yeah.
No.
Amber alert.
Yeah. I've been kidnapped.
Oh, have fun.
Sorry, you guys.
Amber Benson is
kidnapped.
How much
do you think you're going to go
Somali
for?
Somali pirates. I don't know. A couple of, at least a crate of chickens.
A crate of chickens.
Mm-hmm, a chicken
now,
crate.
Are these like butcher chickens?
Are coyotes kidnapped?
It's up to you
chickens?
What you want to do with them. Yeah, it's whatever, sure. Whatever okay. You want to do with them.
Oh, okay.
A box of live chickens then.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, done. You're coming back. Chris.
I put these chickens in blackface, dog. No, Sean, please.
Sean, the wild Scotsman.
I put all the animals in blackface.
What is his daily life like now?
Because no,
he just like
mostly
shows up to
collecting
like, tennis tournaments all the time.
Various dyes to make my face black.
Collecting various dyes.
I want to get it right. I'm a perfectionist.
Oh, Sean.
All that theater training.
Out the window.
Yeah.
So you made a stop on the way to Bangkok.
No.
Yeah, we just stopped in Calcutta. Like, hey, Calcutta, India. People get on, people getting off.
Now, was it a bunch of Indian people just hanging on to the side of the plane, like the trains? Just flying.
Just pooping.
No, that was the Princess Cruise Line.
Oh.
That just happened.
Crown Princess.
What?
The Royal Crown Princess.
Royal Crown Princess.
Yeah.
Not the Love Boat. No. If Norovirus had attacked the Love Boat, that would have been a great episode.
Oh, my God.
Just gopher in hip boots. It's like having to wade through all the...
Yeah. Oh, my God. We're on the promenade.
So did you guys get out in Calcutta or you just stayed on? By the
we
way, how big is this plane where you can just approach the pilot?
It's a 727. I asked. You know, I made a request. They looked at me funny.
Didn't answer you at all?
Yeah, he just dead-eye stared me until I backed away. No, he answered me. He was really nice. He just said, ma'am, please return to your seat. Everything will be fine. So... I did. No, but he said they got it covered. And then, like, the most handsome, blue-eyed, gorgeous specimen was in the co-pilot seat, and I was mesmerized, and then I drifted back to my seat. And I was like, we're in good hands. Don't worry, guys.
No, this is an android.
That's just a model they hire to calm female passengers.
It's just a hot fuck
and, like,
doll
as soon
they keep
when they're
in
about
the
to
front.
Take off, he gets out of the cockpit and waits for the next plane.
You just have to look and see what he's doing, which is just mashing his hand on the instruments he doesn't really know. He doesn't really know what's happening.
Where's the up button?
Well, we're going to try to fly through those clouds? Oh, fuck. Really?
A zombie eating them, eating the controls. No, but it was great. It was great. But Tibet, you know, doesn't have, like, you go online and you can't get on. I don't know. Are you guys huge in Tibet? Should I just lay off Tibet?
Yeah, no,
I'm curious. I want to know all about
it. It's pretty crazy. I didn't, you know, it'd be one thing if there was no internet, then everybody's kind of in the dark. But it's the worst kind, because it's, you know how when your phone won't load a page, you kind of lose your mind a little bit.
Yeah.
Imagine Google, Facebook, Twitter, New York Times, I don't know, Deadline, anything, like any newspaper. And if you go on Wikipedia and write, you know, the name of a city in Tibet, like Shigatse, it'll just say population and then blank space. Like nothing else.
It's the Chinese
it's just
internet.
Redacted.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. So so it was just bizarre to realize that they could have that much control over this. I mean, and it does work. If I wanted to look up, like, tiaras, you know, I could just, that would load immediately. Not that I was. Okay, fine, guys.
Why did you go
do this thing where I look up tiaras.
Is this a good price on a tiara?
What's
I don't know.
What I find is strange is that you went to Tibet to use the internet and buy tiaras. Like, I don't know if you really understand what Tibet's for.
Oh, I don't know. It seemed right. It just seemed so right. But yeah, no. It's Tibet's a very beautiful place.
Did you travel around Tibet, or did you say?
Yeah, traveled around, saw a lot of monasteries. Good to go on those.
Sure.
So
good to go. Oh, so I should tell these guys not to build more?
Yeah, maybe just slow the roll on that monastery you're building here at Hollywood Center Studios. no, there. It's a very beautiful Buddhism. Kind of makes a lot of sense. I don't know too much about it, but the little that I do know, it's very compelling to me. I like it. I like it a lot.
What was one of the most interesting things that you experienced? Did you have any revelations or epiphanies, or was it just this is nice?
It's kind of a funny kind of travel when you travel, because you know how when people go to Paris or something, they're like, oh, there's a version of myself that lives in me, and it's going to come out in Paris. I'm going
right.
to smoke cigarettes and drink espresso and bat my eyes at a gentleman caller in the Jardin de Luxembourg. You know, whatever it is, people want to go there, and they're like, I'm going to read Hemingway, and I'm going to have such a good time. But there's no version of yourself that you want to be in a place where, like, they don't really have toilets. You know what I mean? So,
right.
You know, it'd be... So I felt like a voyeur mostly, you know, I was just sort of taking it all in. And I guess, like, if I had to take back any sort of big impression, it's that the Chinese are going to run the entire world really, really soon.
That's what most people say when they come back.
They got it down. I like Nepal a lot. That place is just a total free for all. There's, you know,
that's the side you can climb Everest on.
Right.
Yeah, that's another side. Yeah. If you wanted,
a couple
you know,
sides
I'm not sure what you're. When we were there, it was actually unfortunately that big avalanche that killed all those.
The Sherpas were like,
truckers.
We're not going up anymore.
Well, I don't think you were really planning to climb it, though, right?
You don't know me.
So you were trying to climb it.
You still don't know me.
Okay, but you're not answering the question.
Look, just figure me out, okay?
Okay, well, I'm trying to, but you won't tell me.
Yeah, I got it in me.
No.
Yeah.
What do you have in you?
I mean, come
on. Finger legs?
I got some fingers in me.
I got some fingers in the finger legs.
I always want... I'm obsessed with Mount Everest, but we didn't climb it. I'm not in shape. But that's the other thing. You walk around Tibet, it's like 15,000 feet. You just feel like you're just moving through molasses. It's crazy. But I think it was like 94, 95, whenever that article in Outside Magazine came out about, you know, what Into Thin Air was written about.
Yeah, the John Krakauer book, yeah.
I just read that article, and I remember just not sleeping for two nights thinking about what it had to be like. And then my dad, like years later, my dad and I went to the Science Museum in Syracuse, the IMAX Museum, and we saw Everest. And that expedition was the team that went up when there was that hurricane. They lost all those guys. That was into thin air. So this, like, you're watching this beautiful IMAX movie about Everest, and then it takes this hard turn and becomes about, like, poor Rob Long, you know, naming his baby over a satellite phone from the top of the mountain just before he goes into hypothermia. You know, it's just like, it's just
and they
so
also
intense.
Just there's pictures. I saw someone compiled a bunch of pictures of if you die up there, they just leave you.
They just leave you
because they can't exert the energy to bring you back down. And so it's just
because you're all just these, a block of them, ice. Basically.
You know, some of them just like decades old people just still exactly the same.
And they're markers too now for the trail of like how far up you are. Like, oh, that's the guy in green. That's the woman in blue, and the, you know, they're
you'd be a great
now.
Tour guide on the.
That's the guy in green. That's the woman in blue. Any questions?
You know, it'd be fun. You know, it'd be completely disrespectful, but a fun sketch is if the guys who the Jungle Cruise at Disneyland just all the bad, stupid puns all the way.
Wait,
I'm not saying that man over there is for the environment or anything, but he certainly is going green. Over here.
And now is the part where we have run out of our oxygen. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah. I don't mean to make you blue. Too late. You know, like, just like these really bad, just really bad jungle.
Cold for comedy, guys. Cold for comedy.
Tough crowd. By the way, laughing uses up your oxygen faster.
But not laughing is killer.
That's right.
So,
killing.
But but good stuff. Love it there.
In Nepal, was Nepal some place you'd go back to? You think
it was? It seemed like I haven't been to India except for when our plane landed there without anybody telling us. But I everybody tells me that Nepal is like India light. Mm-hmm. You know. A little cleaner, a little less populated, but everybody stunning people, great food, a lot of curry.
Sure.
What did you feel like when you came back, when you were landing in Los Angeles? Did you feel differently?
I told you I'm afraid of flying, right?
Oh, you didn't go and be like, oh, we're all interconnected and I'm not weirded out anymore.
Maybe landing back in Los Angeles made me so profoundly grateful for our lives here. I mean, truly, it's very strange because when I first started dating my husband, we went to Africa for a month, which was a kind of an ambitious trip for a new relationship. Mm-hmm. In fact, the night before we left, I made two iron-on t-shirts that I gave to him on the last day. And one said, I survived a month in Africa with my new girlfriend. And the other one said, I had a so-so time in Africa with this girl I barely know. on the last, when he proposed, actually, he was wearing the first one, which was sweet. But that was just such an experience. I mean, because it was my first time so completely far removed from anything that I had ever experienced before. And I just felt, you know, so expanded and richer for having just experienced the other side of the world. And so it was a very similar thing with this, but this was a very similar kind of a trip. But such a different kind of a culture. I mean, sort of the Asian influence, the Buddhism, all that is just, it's much more, it's very peaceful. It's a very peaceful, docile, gentle kind of culture and kind of people. It was really nice. But that said, I've had so much weird anxiety there, and I don't know why, but I think it's because roads aren't made, and so you keep imagining yourself falling thousands of feet into a ravine.
Sure.
Or, you know, you don't ever see anybody in a uniform, and yet somebody is directing this plane in. I mean, in Kathmandu, the airport is a pile of rubble, and I'm not kidding. Like, to go through security, I had 17 bottles of water on me all the time, and nobody was ever like, you can't have your water, you know?
Right.
Just nobody... I don't think anybody was manning the store there. So
we need to see your laptop on.
And great. It turns on. Awesome. So it was just so I had so much anxiety. And then you come back here. And before I left, you worry about petty things all the time in L.A. And I haven't given a crap about anything since I've been back. I just feel really just... Hey man, we got it good. Like, you go to the bathroom, the toilet flushes, there's toilet paper and things that you take for granted, you just go, we're so lucky.
An insect doesn't crawl up your butt.
Oh, and insect totally crawls up my butt.
Yeah.
Oh, I got leeches when I was in Nepal.
Wait a minute, what?
Yeah, I rode an elephant into
that
the river.
Part out.
I'm sorry, I forgot. I forgot because it landed on my brain. We rode elephants and bathed with them in the river and in the jungle, and then I came out and leeches were all over me.
Oh, literally? You're not kidding?
No, I'm not kidding.
What is it?
Yeah. It's all good, man.
Do you just like flick them off or are you like, what the fuck?
No, you pull them off. Actually, I was in the middle of mounting the elephant when, not how it sounds. I was trying to get on top of it.
To fuck it?
To fuck it.
Right.
Take it all, bitch. Remember that joke? You remember that joke about a mouse fucking an elephant? Anyway. I was in, you know, people can, you step on the elephant's snout or trunk
yeah.
And then it lifts you up very beautifully and just drops you so gently on top of it if you're doing it correctly, which I watched other people do, and I was like, this is going to be great. And so I go to step up on the trunk, and then everybody's like, leeches! Leeches on your legs! So I'm in the middle of, like, mounting an elephant while trying to pull off these blood-sucking leeches off of my legs. I'm stepping on the elephant's eyeball. I'm just like, I'm sorry, this is... And everybody's filming it. My husband's filming it. And it's my ass is, you know, in the air, and I'm just like apologizing to the elephant and pulling off bloodsuckers, and it was so.
Do the leeches hurt, or is it just like pulling off?
They don't hurt, but they leave a lot of blood. I mean, you can if they're full. You know, this one particular one on my leg was very big, so it had been
going to town.
It had been feasting for a while.
Yeah, I mean, people. It's supposed to be
like
therapeutic.
A yeah,
it's supposed
to
be good for you.
Go get a leech treatment at a spa in Koreatown.
And what are they sucking out of you?
Toxins. That's what they always tell you. Toxins.
Or is it just a way they can charge you money just to let leeches suck blood out of you?
Can be a little bit of both, Chris.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Don't fuck a leech without a condom.
No?
Mm-mm. Don't do it.
Why? How would that even come up?
Because you just don't know where they've been.
Well.
How could you?
But, you know.
Wait a minute. What did you do over there?
You don't know me. You don't know anything about me.
I'm curious what you took away from Groundlings into, you know, like in the creation of a show and in the writing of the show. What tool sets did you...
None. I abandoned it and started from scratch.
No, good.
No. Funny enough, the opening of our pilot on Bench, the opening scene is actually a Groundlings sketch, funny enough. So... I wrote a sketch about a woman who gets passed over for a promotion and then tells off everybody in the room. And you think it's look at her. She's losing her mind yelling at everybody. But really, that's only the first minute. And the next 4 minutes are her trying to get out of the room because the elevator doors won't shut properly. So it's really a scene about an elevator. And you know, people are loading into the elevator and the doors shut instantly. And then she misses it. And then she's like standing there and then, you know, so it's all about the elevator. But in TV, that doesn't really translate. So nobody wants to just watch a show about an elevator. And plus, you only get 21 and a half minutes
right.
to tell the story. So, you know, one of the things about Growlings is it's really, you have to sort of come fully loaded. If you have 5 minutes to do this slice of life, you have to come pretty fully loaded with who are these people? What's going on? What's the big thing that's happening on this day? And why should we care? What is it about these people that's specific and unique and detailed enough that we invest and care about them immediately? So I think that was one of the things that we sort of, that Damon and my writing partner, Damon Jones, and I sort of felt like we wanted to come fully prepared with a world that was very rich and very real that we could drop into. And I think that's been what people sort of really responded to. A lot of people say it already feels like a show right away, you know, and I think it's because it feels like a very lived-in world. It's not...
Because at least, you know, with Groundlings or with any live performance, at least you can judge right away, like you can sculpt something with the audience.
Right.
But... when you're writing for television, it's just like, well, I hope the audience in my head is good.
Yeah, and I think Groundlings starts to, you're so often you're writing a sketch and you're like, this is gonna
yeah.
be funny. And then you get out there and it's crickets. And so it never surprises me how wrong we are, or I am at least, a lot. But I am finding that I know when a joke will work. If not the whole overall concept, if it's not going to just, if people don't grab onto the concept immediately, that's one thing. But you know a joke will genuinely, you know, if I hear something in the writer's room and it makes me laugh, that's good enough for me. It doesn't, I don't have to, you know, run it up the flagpole with like five other people.
Right.
I think you start to calibrate in your ear a good sense of like, well, this is probably, I think this is funny. This is funny, right? Yeah, it's funny. But also, you know, Groundlings is all about collaboration and, you write with other people constantly. So I love working with other people. I can work alone, but I prefer to, I listen to other people. I take in what everybody says, you know, and the only thing that we felt like we knew going into it was the tone, was how absurd or how real we wanted it to be, you know? And then when we got the other writers on board with that, they got it right away too. And so then the room became like a little mini Groundlings. I mean, we actually had a couple Groundlings in there and, you know, so it was, and hired a lot on the show. You hire a lot of your friends because there's a shorthand. Immediately they get it. They know what you're going for.
Yeah. And do you, how long have you been doing the show?
We shot 12 episodes.
So do you feel like, oh, I learned all this stuff in the first 12 episodes.
Yes.
And if we do more, then I'll do this.
Yes, definitely. I mean, there's so much. It was a role that was originally written for me. And I was doing Trophy Wife at the time and couldn't do it. And so we thank God got Eliza because she just, you know, she and I and Damon, we just get each other. I mean, right away off the page, she just gets our rhythm and gets and understands what we're going for with this character. Totally 100%. And so once we shot it, I was like, there's no way I could have had any kind of creative, you know, voice in this. And as much as I have, you know, the imprint that you want to put on it, you know, picking out the music. I mean, I never wanted to be a showrunner, writer, creator, producer person because, quite honestly, if somebody said, like, should we use the blue plate or the red plate? I'd be like, I don't give a crap what plate.
Right.
Who cares? And then as soon as somebody asks you and you go, I don't care, and they walk away, you're like, oh, well, now I do care because if I get out there, it's going to be a blue plate. Well, I'm going to wish it was a red plate. And so it is all of a sudden you are making every single decision, whether you want to or not. But then when you step back, you realize, oh my God, this is like, we birthed this thing. Yeah. This is crazy. So if there was a second season, you know, I feel like that's so nice to have all that stuff already figured out, you know.
Are you involved in every part of the process?
Yeah. Yeah. It's bizarre, but yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely on set, in the room, in the editing, in the, you know, listening to every music cue, listening to, you know, every mix, every everything. So reading every draft, every, you know,
following the actors home.
Yeah. Making them dinner, finding them matching outfits,
potential mates.
Yeah,
and,
or breaking them up, helping them find better mates.
If it's not working, you want to let them know.
This relationship is a blue plate,
yeah,
and you really need to be dating.
Bathing
the red
them,
plate.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Bathing the actors.
Just
leeches.
Bathing them in leeches.
You never change the water.
Yeah.
You just keep bathing different
Next.
Actors.
Next. Come on, Jay Harrington.
Eliza's like, why did you bring an elephant into my bathtub?
I was like, are we going to talk about the elephant in the bathtub?
Yes, nice. Well done.
Points.
Well done, points to you, of course. Yeah, Eliza's really funny. I've been bugging her about coming on the podcast. I think she'd be
so great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So are you completely done and just waiting to see what happens with the next season?
Yeah, pretty much. I don't know.
What are you doing with your free time besides going to Nepal?
Oh, God, guys, you know so much. I'm going to climb Everest from the Tibet side. I'm acting a bunch, and I'm writing a new pilot with my writing partner.
Oh.
Oh, what?
Someone's busy.
Oh.
But you know you can't work and have a relationship at the same time.
You know.
That's what your show says.
Good. I'm glad you read between the lines because that is exactly what I want dumb women to figure out. Just make room, idiots, for the smart women who can't handle relationships.
What's a character that you did at Groundlings that you thought, like, this is going to destroy, and then it just, like, you could never get it off the ground?
I did this woman who I thought would be so funny if this one woman was, like, woke up one day and realized she was fat and that she had to go burn off all her fat that day. And so it was just her running around, like, getting ready, just having the realization, like, holy shit, I'm fat. I didn't know. How did I miss this kind of thing? And which is me every morning, by the way. And then goes running out and then can't. She goes and runs and then comes back and can't move. And the rest of the scene is her not able to move but has to get ready for this date. And so it was... when I put it up for other Groundlings, we were peeing ourselves. And then I put it up for patrons of the arts. And they were like, from the minute I said I'm fat, they were like, I hate her. And then the whole thing just kept imploding on itself even more. Yeah. Like with each silent thing that happened, that went by, my confidence was so decimated, but my commitment level went to the point where I was actually really hurting myself physically on the stage. And so it was, that was.
Did you have other sketches in the show after that?
Oh, sure.
And what's going on in your head during that, when you're like,
what's going on in your head is, it's sort of like, I imagine right before somebody's about to get shot by a firing squad, where you're just like, is there any way out of, I can't think of it. Is there any way out of it? Is there any way? Is so that a door? Can I get out? I'm tied.
See an out.
I'm here. I have to be here. I guess maybe I could, I don't know. At least I'm blindfolded. Like, I don't know. It's just sort of like you can't see them because there's lights in your face, but you know, they're in their seats going, oh, this poor woman.
And then, of course, you have to blame all the other Groundlings. Like, why didn't you tell me this was going to be like this?
Oh, yeah,
you
don't that's, my style. That's my style. That's my style. I come out, I'm like, you guys, come on. You really misled me with your laughter earlier.
You know, support's not always good.
Yeah, I don't need it, okay? I don't need your pandering.
Just be straight with me. Just be super straight. That's really funny. And so that was the only time you did that sketch?
There's another sketch where I think farts are the funniest thing in the whole wide world, and it was just a person farting for a really long time, and like somebody in the booth making still fart funny. Noises, and I just was like, this can't not be amazing.
How long into your relationship before you and your husband could fart in front of each other?
We don't.
Really?
Yes. Thank you so much for asking. I'm serious because I've had, before my husband, I was in a very long relationship where it was just free for all. And
this is
good advice for all of your listeners. But it is terrible. It's like, that's death to a relationship, I think. You got to keep it. I mean, if somebody has like a little something squeak out, we just carry on. It's so weird because I'm filterless and I'll talk about anything to death. But that is one thing that we agreed very early on. I said, probably on our third date, I'm like, I will never fart in front of you. And he's like, I have no problem with that. That's, and so we don't. And I have to say, it keeps the sexy alive.
I think I only, I typically don't. And
don't do it. It's hard to back.
Yeah, once you open
that,
the door, you gotta
I didn't. Although when you're with someone for a really long time, every once in a while, just because it's unexpected, because it doesn't happen. I was dating a girl. Oh, this was Janet. I was dating Janet Varney many years ago.
I love her.
She's the best.
What came first, the girlfriend or the podcast?
What?
Girlfriend.
Did you have her before you had the podcast?
Oh, years before. Yeah.
Oh, really?
This was like, we dated from 2004 to 2011.
Because, I've been on her podcast.
Yeah.
JV.
And did, did you inspire her, or did you guys just evolve podcast?
I started the podcast while she and I were still together, mm-hmm. and I had been saying to her, like, you should really do a podcast, because yeah. she's one of the funniest people.
She's so great.
And sweet and warm and lovely, and so... Mm-hmm. But it wasn't until after we broke up, but we remained friends, where she mm-hmm. was like, oh, I'm thinking about starting a podcast now. And I'm like, well, you have to do it, and we'll help produce it with you. And so JB Club was a great, like, yeah, she's great. Mm-hmm. But I think it was probably, wow, it might have been like 2 years into my relationship with Janet.
Mm-hmm.
And we were walking through, we used to go to Tucson every year because her family is there. We would go every year for New Year's. And we were walking through like some desert park. And I just felt, and I'm horrified to fart in front of people, mm-hmm. particularly in relationships. I think for that very reason. It was just, I don't know why, for whatever reason, it was just instilled in me. Like,
it's a slippery slope.
You just don't do that. Hey,
I don't mean it that way.
And so I had one in the chamber, and I was like, well, I can't. And I had a camera, and Jenna was walking ahead of me, and I'm like, well, I cannot let this opportunity pass. And so it's just like, so... Boom! And then right as she turned around, I snapped a picture so I could get her reaction of the first time. And it's the face is the fucking best.
I wish I could see this picture so badly.
And her, her face is just turning around going, whoa! It's the best. If you're gonna do it, like, it was the absolute best way to do it.
That's awesome.
I'm sure I have that picture.
I found out that I fart in my sleep, and
it's like butt snoring.
You have no control over that.
No.
You know? And this is from my ex-boyfriend, because I told you we don't talk about these things. But my ex-boyfriend's like, you were so annoying last night. And I go, why? He goes, because you farted in your sleep. But then I go, oh, did I? And he's like, yeah, but then you would yell, what happened?
Which is the equivalent.
And then I would be like, you farted. And then you would go, oh no, that's so embarrassing. And then you'd be out. And I'd be like, okay, stop yelling. And then it would happen again. You'd be like, what? What happened?
You know, that's the equivalent of when a dog farts but doesn't understand what's happening and its head whips around. Like, that's that same, what happened? What happened?
All in my sleep. He's like, you're yelling. Like, what?
Like,
and so, oh God, I'm so embarrassed.
Like an
right
old lady?
Now.
What happened?
Who did that?
What was that?
That was you.
Was there a... did someone...
No, that was you. Oh, that was what it was.
A barking spider? What happened?
Barking spider is the asshole itself.
It is. Yeah.
Oh, God. Grandmothers.
So anyway.
My grandmother had quadruple bypass surgery, and she was never a funny person ever until after her surgery. And we went into the to visit her, my mom and I, and she goes... The nurse, I don't know what blood pressure is, good or bad, so I'm going to throw out weird numbers. But I remember the nurse goes, oh, she's doing really well. Her blood pressure came down today really nicely. My mom goes, oh, what was it? And the nurse goes, oh, it was 130 over 240 or something. And my grandmother perks up and she goes, 240? If it gets any higher, sell! And then she went down. We were like, who is she? And then after that, she was hilarious. She
really?
Was like a hilarious person.
They must have scooped out all the stuff that was blocking her
right.
funny
all her
flow.
Right. All her Judaism.
Funny flow.
All her Judaism.
All her anxiety.
Well, when is Benched on, and when should people watch it, and how can people watch it?
People should watch it completely naked.
What?
With a jar of coconut oil
coconut
next
oil.
To them.
Okay.
No, people should watch it sitting down because it is a real thriller. No, yeah. It's people should watch it on the television set at 10:30 on Tuesdays on USA, unless you have DirecTV, and I think you have to watch it at 7:30 or something.
Oh, you get the East Coast feed.
Yeah. And then and they should watch it promptly, and they should watch it like they're, you know, like they're just ready to learn about legal comedy.
Great.
Legal yeah. comedy. Just really ready to really get a real, you know.
This comedy's legal,
but it shouldn't be. It's so funny.
thank you. Where have you been? Holy crap. That's the best. Take a memo, Tracy.
Objection.
God,
too much laughter. Sustained.
Syracuse t-shirt.
Finally.
Yeah.
Listen, there's a couple of taglines, if you want to use, for Benched.
Oh, okay.
Let it finger you in the Finger Lakes. Ooh. Or Benched, like being gingerly placed in the back of an element by its own trunk while you step on its eye.
Whoa.
If you want to.
How long have you been working on that second one?
It's weird that you told that story because I've been working on it for like 7 months. Yeah, so it was just sort
of... He read the Deadline article of when the deal was struck, and he started immediately.
Yeah, and I did all this elephant research.
Damn!
Yeah, if you go to his dressing room, it's just like...
I mean, that just rolled off your tongue like, wow.
Yeah.
It's just full of cutout pictures of elephants and law books and twine.
Close-up of their eyes.
Drawing lines. He sees something.
Oh, my God. Like, when you murder people, somebody's going to come find your apartment and be like... This makes all the sense in the world.
Why would you think I would do that?
Nothing.
Why would you say that?
Are you the Yellow King?
Wait, who's the Yellow King?
True Detective.
Oh, oh yeah, right. Sorry. Duh. Oh, God.
Behind on everything.
No, I just don't have a memory.
You were busy creating, not consuming.
I was doing regional theater at the time.
I'm sorry, I don't have time to make television.
I'm so sorry.
What if you're like, I was doing the theater. I think television is dumb. Except for Benched.
Except for Benched. A laugh out loud legal comedy.
Well, it's good to see you, Michaela Watkins.
It's so nice to see you. Thanks for having me.
Of course.
It's so wonderful.
The end.
Don't fart in front of your current girlfriend.
Don't fart in front of your significant other.
Yeah, don't do it.
Don't.
And don't poop in front of them. Shut the door.
I was having lunch with someone the other day and explaining to them the phenomenon of surveillance camera ass-picking videos. Where people get caught on surveillance cameras in public just jamming their hands in their pants. And I started laughing so hard because I just started to Google woman scratches and I got like SCR.
Wait, why?
Because I was going to say woman scratches ass in store. I got woman SCR and then Google's autofill.
Scratching is genderless.
Autofill immediately, like the top one was scratch and sniff, and I laughed so hard. And it's a thing; it's a phenomenon that people will dig and this in the one particular video, the woman had these like horrible French press on nails.
Oh dearie, dear!
Just went down in there, then she was in line.
Oh my God!
And then just like hand comes out, and then sniffing.
No.
And then you see her like bawling something over their fingers.
No!
Yes!
Who was this homeless person?
And she was very home-ish.
What? That's crazy!
Yeah.
No, she, like French manicure.
French manicure.
I can't.
Like white trashy, like, you know, very ornate jeans type of a woman.
So the boyfriend that I used to, I would maybe flatulate in front of, long time ago, in my 20s. He also got me to admit one time that I had, you know, at some point in my life, picked a booger and tasted it. And and I'm sorry. We're watch Benched. Anyway, but then I came home from work and he had in my apartment building written a sign that said "Booger Eater Lives Here" with arrows that went all the way to my front door.
So this relationship was built to last. How did you think you were going to be like, that's hilarious, let's have sex
I
now?
I was so mortified. I wanted to die. I just wanted to die. I mean, everybody in my apartment building saw it. It says "Booger Eater Lives Here." arrows all the way to my front door.
And did you fight about this?
No, he was very funny. Like one time I came home from work And I've been home, and I like in the kitchen, and I get on my computer, and then he comes. I didn't realize anybody was home, and so he comes into my office holding a spatula, totally naked, and he's like, "God damn it!" And I was like, "What?" He goes, "I've been lying naked on the bedroom floor with a spatula in my ass, hoping you'd come find me." And he's like, "I've been there like 25 minutes, and you didn't even walk in the bedroom. You walked by the bedroom. I heard you go pee in the bathroom." And then he went back into the kitchen, rifled around the refrigerator, and he's like, "Dah." You're like, "Now I'm late." You know? Like, got dressed and left in a huff. And I was like, "Now I'm sorry."
You're like, "On the way home, can you pick up a new spatula, please?"
Yeah. So it didn't work out.
Do you have to date someone who's? I mean, like you're married. So when you date,
I am. But weirdly, the guy I married is the one person who's not like a professional funny pants.
And so that obviously worked.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a sense of humor, obviously, or be such a bummer, you know. Explain to him. See, the reason this is funny, honey, is because.
Why would a person put a spatula in their butt?
I think that's odd.
I mean, I don't know what it was like in your last relationship.
Yes.
I only put ladles in my ass.
And I'm like, ladles aren't funny.
They're not.
I was really worried when we started dating. I was like, oh no. I'm sorry. You tried to wrap this whole.
No,
I'm
curious. I'm just curious.
Yeah, I was just a little like, uh-oh, I can't date this guy. Maybe I can sleep with him, but I can't date him.
Right.
I could totally sleep with her. But then you realize that funny thing is great, you know. But it's. I always thought, you know, funny had to be number one, but it turns out it can be. They can appreciate funny, but it's not a relationship makes, if that makes sense. Because I got really freaked out one time. We were one of our first road trips, and we weren't doing bits the entire time. And so I was like, this is weird.
Am
I going to like just completely dry up as a comedian? Am I just going to have not be generating funny in my off time to use when I need it or something? Am I just going to atrophy? And the answer is yes, probably, but I'm so much happier.
It's hilarious.
Well said.
So,
good way to end.
Yeah.
Enjoy your burrito, people. The end of the podcast is nigh. Michaela Watkins, season opening. And she's taking it.
Scratch your ass and film it and send it to us.
Hashtag scratch and sniff.
Thank you.
Thanks
for having me.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.